This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour two of the Lombardi Line coming at you from coast to coast, as always. Michael Lombardi out at his office in Jersey. I'm Stormy Bonantoni, live from Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This show, as always, presented by DraftKings. Got a great hour ahead coming up in about 30 minutes. We'll have DraftKings Network host and analyst Claudia Belafato get her thoughts on the NBA Finals as well as the Stanley Cup Final upon us. We got Lombardi's List breaking down the most valuable non-QBs in the NFL, and at the end of the hour, teams who missed the playoffs last season that are favored to make it this year. Do we agree or disagree? But Michael, first and foremost, it is mandatory minicamp continuing to roll on across the NFL. So I have a nice little attendance list here for marquee players who are on site or are not. So real quickly, just going to run through it real quick. Bengals star wide receiver Jamar Chase is at mandatory minicamp as he seeks a new contract. Tagged T. Higgins is not. Amari Cooper, an interesting one that we found out is skipping Browns minicamp. Left tackle Tristan Wirfs for the Bucks is at minicamp. Matthew Judon for the Pats is also around. He says he's not giving up his money. Now, here's the one that stands out to me the most, and I want to, and I know it's so annoying when we always have to talk about the Jets, but they're in the headlines yet again today because they go out and have their most important offseason acquisition that is somebody who wants a contract. And Hassan Riddick is not there at minicamp. And apparently also Aaron Rodgers isn't on site. And it is an inexcused absence. So Robert Saleh was asked questions about it. He said that there is an event that's very important to him that Aaron Rodgers has elected to go to, but it is not excused. So he's going to be paying fines for this. Did it surprise you when you found out Rodgers was not going to be there today?
It really did. I mean, you know, look, he's your best player. You need him there. And you would think that on a Tuesday, June the 11th, like there could be some way to rearrange it. You know, if he goes to Saleh and says, look, you know, I got something on June 11th I've got to be at, then let's just have camp 12 and the 13th. I'm not saying that Aaron should be the GM of the team, but they should work in concert to handle that. Or, you know, we'll have it Wednesday and Thursday. I just think it's really challenging to try to piece all this Jet stuff together. It makes really no sense to me because it's hard to, you know, like they've got so many, nobody talks from the front office. Riddick won't come in under contract. Joe Douglas makes the trade. Everybody in America knows that Riddick wanted a new contract. So did Riddick not tell his owner that? And is the owner not letting him? Like, it's just weird. Like, who is communicating with people in that building? Do they have computers there, Stormy, do you think? Do they have email?
I'm not sure if they're in the 21st century, Michael. I've been trying to figure that one out myself.
It makes no sense. Like, how do we not communicate? Look, I get sometimes, but when they call it an unexcused absence, then clearly Rodgers went to him and said, look, I have this thing. And Saleh must have said, well, you got to be here no matter what. I don't care what you have. Like, okay, well, can't we work this out? Like, I mean, isn't there, why would I want to be labeled unexcused? Are you trying to send a message to the team? It's not going to affect Riddick. Like, I've seen this happen where, you know, Brady says, hey, Bill, I'll be there for every day, except I have to be here for this. It's really important before the offseason starts, before everything. When you give me the calendar, I didn't know when this was. I need to be there. Okay, we'll work it out. We'll figure it out. But when you call it an unexcused absence, that means you couldn't work it out. Like, what are we doing?
And I'm sure when Rodgers does come back and he's on the podium, he'll explain it away and make it seem as if it's all sunshine and rainbows and it's fine. But to me, when I look at the New York Jets as a whole, I feel like it's just a very fragile house of cards and that any wind blows in is going to risk tearing this entire thing down. And when you hear Robert Saleh up at the podium answering questions about Hassan Reddick and about Aaron Rodgers, he's deflecting constantly. Like every question about the contract, despite him admitting that he finally did talk to Hassan Reddick, which was music to my ears, that he actually did talk to his new acquisition. And he's a defensive head coach. Like, let's keep that in mind as well. Haven't talked to him, really. But deflecting all of those questions to Joe Douglas. It's like we're back to pleading the fifth again. Is that going to be the whole press conference? Because I'm not getting anything out of this.
It makes no sense to me at all. Like, I don't understand it. Like, who is talking? Like, shouldn't we have somebody come out there and say, okay, here's what's going on. Here's what's happening. Here's what we're doing. Here's what I understand. Like, I don't get it. Like, why can't we figure this out? Why can't we have better communication? You know, and Salah go up there. He's the worst poker player in the history of the world. It's almost like he leads you down the he doesn't want to give you the answer, and you could tell he doesn't want to give you the answer. Like, he's not giving you the truth. You could feel it.
You can read him like a book, Michael. Tomorrow on the program,
you really can.
We'll have plenty of sound coming out of all of these press conferences and stuff. Maybe do a GM translator or news and noise, because there's lots of things that are coming through. But I do here want to do, like we always do here in hour two, what's on Michael's mind. And I'm very interested in today's, because it surrounds a hot button topic that came through yesterday. So what do you have for the people?
Well, I think Will Hill hit the nail on the head. Like, I'm really kind of, I don't understand how this whole Danny Hurley thing came about. Like, he made it very clear he had no interest in Kentucky, right? Yeah. He made it very clear. And Shams was on, and it was Hurley, and and he had it as Riddick, and, you know, the guy who used to be the head coach of the Carolina Hornets, James Borrego, I believe his name is. Borrego, thank you, Stormy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and so, okay, I get the Lakers want to have a marquee guy. But when the deal comes out, the first thing I look at, I say, 6 years, $70 million. Like, who are you getting on that deal? When Steve Kerr makes $17.5 a year. When Pop, now you could say, well, Kerr's won championships. Yeah, that's right, he has won championships. But you're not getting a guy to leave college for less than what the market is. Remember, Tua put it perfectly, the market is the market. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, we just saw Spoelstra get $15 million. Like, you're not getting them for $11 million. I mean, Bud just got $10 million from Phoenix. So, like, that made no sense. Like, if you're going to get somebody to leave, so what Will Hill was saying is almost like, was this a created story that we're all reacting to? Because they kept the lid on it for so long, and I said this to you, that If you kept the lid on it for that long, couldn't you have waited a couple more days while he decided, mm-hmm. so you're not embarrassed? Mm-hmm. Like, well, I think it's more of a manufactured story than it was real. I never got the sense that from talking he was going to leave from people that know him.
And so we had Matt Eumanns on the show yesterday, and he was on Follow the Money this morning as well. And he's talked a lot, similar thought process of, okay, if this was really a thing, why was it so just mutually beneficial for so many parties here, right? Like Adrian Wojnarowski, who it appeared got scooped, quote unquote, by Shams with the Reddick reveal a couple days earlier. Then he comes in with the Hurley of it all. And obviously he has the relationship that he has with the family, Dan Hurley. So he's going to get pub for getting the scoop. Hurley is going to be in a situation with UConn where he's going to get a raise there. And I know that the spokespeople for Hurley are saying, oh no, this was already in the works beforehand. This wasn't a leverage move. It has nothing to do with that. But then the fact that given what the contract offer was from the Lakers, his people never combated it to negotiate a higher number, saying, okay, can we wheel and deal to get to here? Like, that didn't take place. So I think you're dead on. I feel like this was just a situation where, hey, let's show that we're in this situation. The Lakers get to say that we tried. UConn gets to keep their guy and Hurley gets a raise and Woj looks great.
Yeah, exactly. It almost was like Charlie's Wilson War. It was almost like it was staged, right? That's what I feel. Did you ever see that movie, Charlie Wilson's War? It's like it was staged. Like, it made no sense. And, like, we're waiting for him to decide, and then everybody knew he wasn't going anywhere. And now the governor comes in. And, look, I get you can play, but it always makes you so cynical when it comes to media reports. Like, was it real? You know, and that's where I think the reason it's on my mind is because I think we as a betting network – and people that are giving out information, we have to be careful to sort through the data. Yeah. Like, what are we being told? Is it true? Is this guy really a good player that's changing or is this just some agent pushing a narrative out there? You know, and that's what we have to do. And we have to constantly ask ourselves, you know, there's a new book out by a guy, I forget his name, who wrote it. His name, This Story May Contain Lies. Mm. And from reading this book, you have to be very diligent in understanding what is the object or the objective of the story. What's behind it all? And I think certainly during the week of NFL football, there's a lot of stories that are out there that may not or may not be true. Now, we often say, well, the sharps are moving the number, when in reality, it isn't. There's too many ghosts out there.
Well, and this report, too, of course, like the timing of when it comes out, the start of the NBA Finals, that is what ends up dominating the news cycle and the timeline there. And even at the time, I'll admit, like, I thought that, especially like with the Jim Harbaugh comparison of him leaving after winning a national championship, it was, you know, you think about the struggles that collegiate sports are having trying to shift into being a non-amateur sport anymore. I thought that a lot of things on the surface made sense to potentially go the professional route, especially considering he's been open and vocal about saying the NBA is a place that he would like to go, and that's a dream of his. But the Lakers, where things sit right now, were not the fit. And I understand that a ton as well. And I understand the comfort that he has. And maybe the NBA is the dream, but maybe it's the Boston Celtics or the New York Knicks that are the dream and not the Los Angeles Lakers, because he is an East Coast guy through and through. And he has an opportunity to do what only John Wooden has done in history and be a three-peat head coach in college basketball.
No question. And I think, to me, you have to be really careful, because the story, like I kept saying this all along, Stormy, if they had him, if they thought they were going to get him, that's why the story got released. But what benefit did it have for it to be released when he was still thinking about it? It makes the Lakers look bad.
No question about it. And I am very curious to see ultimately where they end up landing on their head coaching cycle. All right, we're going to hit the break here. Last week, we asked you to send in your votes for the most impactful non-quarterbacks in the NFL. This week, we're following up that conversation with Lombardi's List. Michael's ranking his top five non-QBs next on VSiN.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We here at the Lombardi Line are always here to help, and we want to help you bet smarter this year with a VSiN Pro subscription. Right now, you can upgrade to a VSiN Pro annual subscription for $199, and that's down from our usual $240 price, plus we're throwing in an extra month absolutely free. With VSiN Pro, you'll get exclusive access to premium analysis, expert picks, and advanced betting tools that'll give you an upper hand all year long. And here's the big news. Our NFL betting guide is coming out later this month. This guide is your ultimate one-stop shop resource for all things football season, packed with detailed team, division, and conference analysis, and of course, best bets for the upcoming season. Don't miss out. Limited time deal, vsin.com/subscribe. Use our promo code Lombardi. That'll help you claim the discount and the bonus month. Again, that's vsin.com/subscribe. Promo code Lombardi. Speaking of Lombardi, it's time for Lombardi's List here on the Lombardi Line. That's just a fun word to say. I'm just going to keep going with it. But I said it before the break, last week when we got on here, we did our weekly poll, which we're going to do throughout the course of the summer, asking fans to tune in and place their votes on the most valuable, most impactful non-quarterbacks in the NFL. And this week we decided to task you with a similar challenge, but we wanted to take it a step further and have you rank them 1 through 5. So let's start at number 5 here, Michael, and work our way up from there. Your number 5 most valuable non-QB.
Well, you know, one thing when you watch, and this is going to be a very heavy list in terms of defensive players, because as for as much as everybody wants to talk about the receivers, there's only one or two guys that tilt the field. But a defensive rusher's tilt the field. My number 5 and 5A, 5B is Parsons is number 5. 40 and a half career sacks, 89 quarterback hits. He's very good. Next year with Mike Zimmer, will they move him around? They'll make him a little bit more of an effective player, because once he lines up and there's an uncertainty about who's blocking him, that's when he excels. I love Max Crosby, but what I love most about Max Crosby is his unbelievable relentlessness. His conditioning is remarkable. I mean, here's a guy who's got 52 career sacks. He's got 124 career hits on the quarterback. You know, last year he had 14 and a half sacks. I mean, you go into a game now with he and Christian Wilkins lined up together, pick your poison. Makes that really, really tough. So I just think those guys, those are what I call game plan guys. Everybody on this list on Tuesday, you're worried about how in the hell are we going to block them, or how are we going to cover them? That's the key, is especially if they don't play quarterback. Number four, this is near and dear to your heart, even though he wasn't the same player last year as he was 2 years ago, but Nick Bosa still changes the game. He makes it very difficult. You know, he had 10.5 sacks last season. He's got 53.5 career sacks in a very short time. He missed one season with a knee injury, and he's got 141 quarterback pressures. Really amazing. And he go into the game, and last year, if Hargrave's healthy, like he wasn't at the end of the year last year, he's playing through some injuries, it's going to make Nick Bosa an even better player. So, you know, to me, the one receiver, and this guy changes the game completely, and I know Justin Jefferson became the highest paid, but there is no one in the NFL like Tyreek Hill. Remember 1 year he was like the 9th best receiver in football? I almost lost my lost my stuff. I mean, it was like, how is this possible? Who's watching? This guy changes the game. He makes it easier for Waddle. He makes it easier for Tua. You have to be really careful about the run game with him, because the run game is not that he blocks anybody, because he doesn't. It's just that he draws the coverage. And when he starts to motion around, it messes with your run force, and it messes with who's going to take it. And one miss, off to the races. I think he is truly, I mean, I put him third. I think, and you know how I am with receivers, but this guy is a completely different, scary, scary player. He runs, I was talking to somebody this morning, he runs routes that are hard to cover because they're not really receiver-type routes. They're like running back routes. And then once he gets the ball in his hands, what makes him so hard is he's quick, and then he's explosively fast in an instant. Like, there's no downtime.
And Michael,
number two,
before you go to the top two real quickly, just to follow up on the Tyreek Hill side of it, I think the biggest compliment that you have paid him was last year throughout the season, because of the impact that he has on Tua and not the other way around. And again, the type of tilt the field player he is that other opposing defensive coordinators are game planning for, are scared of. You said, like, you couldn't believe that he wasn't getting more consideration in the odds market for MVP, because while that is a quarterback award, we know it. If there was anybody that was a non-quarterback last year during that time before he got injured, that he was just on a tear, like, he deserved that respect and that credit because of what he brings to the team. But go ahead. Go to the top two.
No. I mean, he's a joy to watch. He's hard to tackle. He's got this incredible quickness. Yeah, I mean, for him to get snubbed, if – I think Justin Jefferson's great. I think Chase is great. None of them are as good as Hill.
Yeah.
Let me say that to you. Nobody changes the game like Hill does. No one makes defensive coordinators hold on to their ass like Hill does. No one. My number two guy, and let me just say this, all six players, if they continue along this path that they're on, are all going in the Hall of Fame. Myles Garrett, 88.5 sacks in his short career so far, 172 quarterback pressures, had 14.5 sacks last year, 39 quarterback pressures. Everybody's trying to take him out of the game. Schwartz did a really good job of moving him around, but he changes the game. Not many guys can block him. You get a bad offensive tackle, you're going to see Myles Garrett against him, and you're going to have to chip him. You're going to have to put two guys on him. See, the one thing about the receiver position, and people say, well, you don't have enough receivers on this list. You know, if you talk to any good offense, that you could take a receiver out of a game. You know, you could do it. I mean, you could double him. Now, you can't take Hill out of a game because he'll run through double teams if you don't jam at the line. But you can force the ball somewhere else by coverage. But some of these defensive players, you can't take out of the game. Like Aaron Donald would be on this list. He's not playing anymore. You can't take him out of the game, especially if you move him around. So Garrett, and then, of course, T.J. Watt. I mean, T.J. Watt is just relentless. He's like Max Crosby, constant, constant, constant. You know, and even in a 34, when he's on his feet, he's still effective. When he puts his hand in the dirt, watch out. So, you know, 19 sacks last year, 36 quarterback hits. I mean, these guys are in line to become Hall of Famers.
Finished second in the Defensive Player of the Year voting last year. It was Myles Garrett who won it. But I think this leads to an interesting conversation now for Defensive Player of the Year as well, considering of your, we'll call it the top six, because 5A and 5B, to your point, are there. But five of your top six non-quarterbacks in the NFL are guys that are getting after the quarterback on the defensive side of the ball. Watt and Parsons are both plus 550 favorites to win Defensive Player of the Year this season, followed by Bosa and Crosby at 7-1, Myles Garrett plus 750 to repeat. So that bunch, all very tightly in terms of odds, like all very close up there up top. And then you got Aiden Hutchinson there at 10-1. Pass rushers typically dictate the voting in this market so much more than any other position. The first corner that we see crack the odds on the board right here, Sauce Gardner at 60-1, shows again the impact that you're saying as far as a non-quarterback goes that these edge rushers and pass rushers ultimately have. I know it's so early to be voting, to be making a pick on this type of a thing, but based on the system with which they play, the schedule, other things that stand out to you, do you have any early thoughts on these numbers?
I think the other thing you have to combine with this is winning, right? Like, I think Max Crosby at 7-1 would be a great play, but do you think the Raiders, they're not going to give it to somebody who wins 5-6 games, right? So you're going to have to get, it's got to be like Aiden Hutchinson at 10-1 might be a good play. Mm. Now he's got, you know, he's got Marcus Davenport on the other side. They've helped their inside defensive tackle. They think they can play man-to-man now, which they didn't think they could play last year. They drafted a corner in the first round, a corner in the third round. They traded for Carlton Davis. You know, they still have guys from last year coming back on the team. So I think they feel like Mosley has never really been healthy for him, but maybe he will be this year. So I think they can get after it a little bit more. So he would be an interesting one at 10-1. You know, I just don't think there's anybody. I mean, Chris Jones could easily be the defensive player of the year if he would play all the time. Because he could change the game. I mean, look, let's be honest. I mean, there was a couple plays in that Super Bowl where he was out of the game on that last, on the 49er drive, and then he went back in. Now, he got lucky because the 49ers blew the blocking assignment. He didn't make the play. They blew the blocking assignment.
30-1, the odds there for Chris Jones. And with Nick Bosa, as you referenced, he took a step back last year, 10.5 sacks. It was his lowest output since 2020 when he missed all but two games with an ACL. It was a very uncharacteristic season for him. I think a big part of that was the approach that they had from the defensive coordinator spot. And also, this is a guy who didn't sign his contract until 4 days before the season started. And, you know, we heard from Deebo Samuel a couple years ago with the same organization saying that the contract situation leading into that year for him ended up impacting the way that he played that year. I wonder if that could have played a role last season as well for Nick Bosa. Yeah. And maybe this season, just hitting the ground running, will have a different elevated approach back to what we know from him.
Yeah, and I think that's the whole 49ers goal right now, is to play defense more aggressively than they did last year. And last year they had, you know, so many guys. You thought Chase Young was going to make an impact, Randy Gregory and Hargrave, mm-hmm. along with Armstead inside. They couldn't quite get it to the level they had it 2 years ago.
No doubt about it. Oh, that's your line. I'm not supposed to take your line. No doubt, baby. We're going to hit the break here. When we come back, Claudia Villafato of DraftKings Network is going to join us. She's got some prop plays in both the NBA and Stanley Cup Finals. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
From groan-worthy dad jokes to patching up skin knees, your dad is one of a kind. And this Father's Day, give him a gift that's guaranteed to take him to his happy place. Omaha Steaks. Package is starting at $99 when you go to omahasteaks.com and use our promo code VSIN at checkout to get $10 off your order. Show your dad the love he deserves with a gift as unforgettable as he is. Visit omahasteaks.com. And again, use that promo code VSIN, V-S-I-N, at checkout. Welcome back to the Lombardi Line, presented by DraftKings, alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. And speaking of DraftKings, DraftKings Network host Claudia Villafato is joining us here on the Lombardi Line via the Progressive Guest Line. We've been cashing some tickets thanks to Miss Claudia the past couple weeks, so looking forward to keeping it rolling here. And I gotta say, I was a little bit surprised to see both the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup Finals start off with 2-0 starts from the home teams, the favorites, because I wanted and I was expecting that we were going to have long competitive series. Maybe not so much. How are you seeing things here so far?
Stormy, I am so the same way. I'm like rooting for this game three to go the other way. I love how Edmonton has played. I know we'll talk about NHL in a second specifically, but I thought that series would be close from the very start. Florida just looks so dominant on all facets. And the Mavs, I mean, I thought it was going to be Luka and Kyrie, and that's why I thought it was going to go six, maybe seven. But Kyrie hasn't shown up. I don't know where he is. So far, it's just the Luka show. So this could go four, guys, unfortunately.
Yeah, it could go four. I mean, it has all the looks of it. I mean, Dallas has got to figure it out. But you've got a couple prop bets, and you're the queen of props. Stormy's the queen of teasers. You love these props. So let's fire them away. Stormy, she's got four props here today. Let's start off with your Kyrie Irving under 2.5 three-pointers made.
Yeah, I'm going to continue to fade Kyrie. I don't think he'll necessarily have three stinkers that he puts up. I do think that he'll get inside like he has been, driving to the basket, the pull-up jumpers. They're not giving him room for that three shot. So the volume hasn't been there. He hasn't hit a three yet. He's 0-for-8. So again, I like him to drive, pull up, maybe get some more points in this game and contribute to some degree, but I don't think it'll come from the three, so I'm going under.
Meanwhile, it seems like this series, for as much hype coming in, was all about Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and how are they going to perform on the big stage. Jrue Holiday has been the leader in the clubhouse for Finals MVP at this point, and there is a prop that you're targeting his over in. Why do you think he's going to continue to elevate his game?
Yeah, I love this rebound number at plus money, especially plus 120 at DraftKings. And you don't want to fall to recency bias too much, but everyone, I think, on this team has become very comfortable in their role. And I'll talk about Tatum in a second with his prop, but Holiday in particular, he has said out loud, I'm a utility guy. They brought me in here to win. I'm not coming in here to win MVP, but a plus 750, I don't think that's the craziest thing in the world. But rebound specifically, if he's not, you know, on a shooting night, he's going to get those boards. He's good with assists. But with these rebounds, his number is too low. He had 11-8 in this series. He cashed in 3-4 in the Pacers series. The effort and the grit is there for him, and it usually shows up on the board. So plus money, especially for 7 or more. I love that. Porzingis also day-to-day. We just got updated with that. So sort of next man up mentality, especially down low.
All right, so let's talk about Tatum. You like him on a double-double at minus 134. Tell us why. And one follow-up to the Tatum. Are you buying him as the MVP favorite, or do you have a sleeper MVP bet you like?
Michael, heading into the postseason, I wasn't even on Tatum. I thought, you know, we talked about Eastern Conference Finals, how that number skyrocketed down for Brown. And I still think there's value here if you're going to give me him. And we're seeing this move, I think 20 cents just within yesterday and today, we saw it move for Brown. I'd go there. I would honestly sprinkle a little for Jrue Holiday. And I know he's not going to drop 20 plus for the rest of this series, but the way he's contributing, basically everyone but Tatum. But what's good about Tatum is he understands it's okay if he doesn't win MVP. So that's why I don't necessarily see the value in betting him as the favorite. But in a prop like this, a double-double where he is having two or three guys on him at all times, he doesn't really need a 20-plus point game because they're winning this way. He knows the scoring isn't going to be easy, so he's stepping up on the boards and the assists. And he has cashed this in all but 3 of 16 games this postseason. There's about a 10-cent difference among shops. So DraftKings, if you can find that 134, I definitely like that.
DraftKings Network host and betting analyst Claudia Bellafato joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. And Claudia, as you said off the top here, it feels like this series could be one that goes four. I know you've been having a lot of success live betting throughout the NBA postseason, but when you see that game three line of Dallas laying two, did it surprise you to an extent that they were favored even going back home considering the way that Boston has looked? And I know historically we as bettors love that idea of, okay, this team is down 0-2. They're going to have home court. Let's buy in on them now. Do you see that being the story or not based on what we've seen from Boston so far?
Yeah, it's that cliche quintessential, they have to win one game, right? And they're going home and this and that. And some of me plays into that, not so much because of the cliche, but more so a lot of things have gone right for the Celtics. They are playing well and the defense looks good, but they had historically bad shooting for them in that first game, and things still worked out for them. It's not like they've been firing on all cylinders. It's just more so the Mavs have looked tired. But if Porzingis is not 100% or doesn't play, and if the Celtics continue having off shooting night, Kyrie does show up to some degree and it's somebody other than just Luka, then yeah, the Mavs probably will win that. But I would look to it for a better live line. Like if the Mavs do fall behind early and you can get over really any plus money since they're laying two right now. But if I could get 3-4 with them, I do think it'll be closer and they'd at least cover that with the points. But I don't know if I'd lay it. I do think they'll get one and it's probably this one. I just can't force myself to bet against the Celtics because that's also a terrible way to watch this game as a Celtics fan, Stormy.
I love it. And I know you two are both hockey fans, so I'll step aside. But Claudia, why don't you tell us why you like Connor McDavid over 3.5 shots, and then you and Stormy can air out all the props and all the breakdown of the hockey game, and I'll just listen intently and enjoy.
What a guy.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I've loved Edmonton all season. I'm so excited for Connor McDavid specifically to be in this spot and so close to getting a cup. Unfortunately, he has fallen behind 0-2, but I think one of the scariest things in any sport is to have the best player on the court, the field, or the ice say, I love what spot we're in. I can't wait to see how he bounced back. And that's what he said. He said, we're going to dig out of this 0-2 hole. I look forward to the haters doubting us. So that's scary. Average 7 attempts per game over the last 5 overall, 6 shots in game 1, 3 in game 2, 25 plus minutes. We know the minutes are going to be there. So if you're going to give me 4 plus shots at even money, I am going to jump at it. Does that mean they're going to get past Sergei Bobrovsky? No, not necessarily, but I like his saves and I like the shot attempts. I don't know if the goals are going to go in, but shots from McDavid, if anyone, I think they'll be there.
So with that in mind, you expect him to be firing at the net. This past game, it felt like a role reversal from game 1 to game 2, only 19 total shots on net, not a single high danger chance at even strength. But with that in mind, I see your prop here for Sergei Bobrovsky going over 25.5 saves. You think it's not only going to be McDavid, but a handful of these guys that are going to try to pepper him and Sergei will get those stops.
It's panic mode, baby. At home, there's no other way. And like you said, with the high danger chances, none of them being there at full strength, that's crazy because that's not what they did in the regular season. That's not what they've been doing in this postseason overall. So I would just say, if you haven't been watching Edmonton closely, people out there, don't fall to the recency bias of game 2. They only had 7 shots in the first 2 periods. That's really uncharacteristic, despite how good this Panthers defense has been. So much credit to Bobrovsky for stopping pretty much everything that has gone his way. But it should be a tough night for him. If Edmonton knows what they're doing, like you said, just pepper him with the shots.
With the price now sitting minus 425, minus 450 on the Panthers to win this series now up 2-0, is Bobrovsky bettable for you in the Conn Smythe market still at a minus number? Do you think that would be a comparable bet?
I don't see necessarily the value in it. Like, if I'm going to go for a futures this early, I still think 3 games in is relatively early in the series. I don't love to lay anything with an award, but how could it go to anybody else?
Yeah.
Like, the talent is too spread out on the offensive and the defensive side. So when it comes down to it, why are they winning? Yes, it's the defense, but mostly it's Bobrovsky standing on his head.
Sitting minus 160 right now. Last thing here real quickly before we let you go. Captain Alexander Barkov did not finish the game after a high hit from Leon Draisaitl. With his availability in question or if he's going to be 100%, how does that maybe shift your view, if at all, on the series?
It worries me a little bit, but again, I think overall it hasn't been too top heavy. Like, all lines have sort of showed up for them. And also the way that he came off, Stormy, I don't know if this is good or bad. Sometimes when it doesn't look like a bad hit and they leave for the rest of the game, it's like, okay, that's really going to be bad. But when you saw it, it didn't look like he was too injured. So I'm just hoping that he comes back and is all right. That's at least how it looked to me.
Appreciate you so much, Claudia, for your time and insight.
Thank you, Claudia. Good luck
with your bets and
great
keep crushing
work.
It over there with Gojo and Golic.
Thanks,
yeah,
guys.
Keep them in line, will you? Thank you, Claudia.
Yes, exactly. Keep them in line. They need it. That's Claudia Bellavato doing a great job every morning during the week with Gojo and Golic on DraftKings Network. We're going to hit the break, wrapping things up on the other side. This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're this close to crowning an NBA champ, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSIN. That's code VSIN for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings, the crown is yours. Luka Doncic, by the way, reportedly receiving a pain-killing injection after the game. And Kristaps Porzingis, as Claudia Bellavato told us in the last segment, currently day-to-day. She doled out a few props for the NBA Finals with us. If you missed any of this show, you want to make sure you get that. Head to VSIN.com/picks, or you can always listen to the show later later in podcast form, wherever you get your podcasts. What we're going to do here, though, real quickly to start this segment, Michael, is our pro tip of the day, which we do every day here on the show. Searchable also on VSiN.com by sport and by show. But when we were going through Lombardi's list, talking about the most valuable non-quarterbacks in the NFL, we got into a conversation a little bit about defensive player of the year. And you made a great point talking about kind of handicapping NFL awards to keep in mind that it's not just about the talent of the player. You have to take into account, do we think this team is going to be successful? Do we think there are pieces around him that are going to set him up for success? Because a lot of these voters aren't betting on teams that are winning five games now, are they?
No, and that's, you know, you can't be defensive player of the year, just like you can't be MVP on a bad team, you know, and that's unfortunately, you know, sometimes, you know, there's some really good players that play on bad teams that if they weren't on bad teams, they probably wouldn't win a game. But they helped them win five, and, you know, you're not going to get any love in there. So it's kind of a correlation bet, Stormy. You've got to kind of tie it together. You know, if you think Cleveland's a Super Bowl contending team, let's just play them out, then you got to play Myles Garrett. You got to ask yourself, for this to be true, what will have to happen? Okay? Mm-hmm. And if Cleveland is a Super Bowl winning team or a number one or number two seed, what has to be true is Myles Garrett has to play lights out. So he's going to be defensive player of the year again. What has to be true is Deshaun Watson has to play lights out. He could be comeback player of the year. But until you complete the sentence, what has to be true for this to be true? You can't really make those long-term bets because you're tying your money up. If you think Buffalo is going to the Super Bowl, is going to be the number one seed, then you better bet Josh Allen to be MVP. That has to be true for it to happen. They're not going to be MVP if Matt Barkley's playing quarterback. They're not going to have the number two seed, number one seed, right? And what we know about the Chiefs is we know Mahomes is going to be the best player. So we already know that. So and the book knows that too. But to find value, we got to find value in what has to be true that no one thinks is true right now.
And just to reinforce that statement about Mahomes, I was looking at MVP odds earlier this morning. He's plus 450 to win MVP this year. The next closest guy is plus 850, and it's Josh Allen. But just to show the disparity even at the top with how people look at Patrick Mahomes. Okay, we had some very interesting breaking news that just came through, Michael, in the world of competitive.
I couldn't believe your reaction.
Because, Michael, you know I love the hot dog eating contest, right? This is something that I'm passionate about. I'm one of the few people in the world that is like, I'm a hot dog connoisseur. I love it. And I think that the 4th of July Nathan's hot dog eating contest is a spectacle of beauty. And evidently, the 16-time Nathan's hot dog champion of the world, Joey Chestnut, is ineligible to compete this year due to a deal he has with Impossible Foods, which you guys heard the Impossible Burger. It's a plant-based brand that is a rival of Nathan's, so they are not letting him compete. I need to protest. This is unbelievable. But potentially for the betting market, while we're doling out pro tips, could mean there's actually some value on the board for once instead of betting the guy we know and expect to win every year.
Oh, no question. Kobayashi's not good. He retired, too, so we don't have him. I mean, the field is wide open. You're going to have to do a lot of homework on hot dog eating contests. But look, in fairness to Nathan's, they sponsor the damn thing. You know, and here's Joey. I mean, what was Joey Chestnut thinking when he did that deal? Did he think he was going to be able to be in the 4th of July watching them? I mean, really, did he think that?
It's crazy.
I mean, come on. Somebody had to give him bad advice. Like, if you do this deal, there's a really good – now, maybe the deal's worth a lot, but how could the deal be worth a lot if he's not on national TV on the 4th of July? Do you even know where Joey Chestnut – I saw him at some minor league park the other day, and I'm thinking, this guy just does this year-round, eats like crap? I mean, I eat like crap year-round, but I do it because I am a fat man. But, I mean, like, seriously –
He's like down in the ice cream sandwiches. See, that those ones, certain ice cream related ones or cold ones, I feel like must be super challenging because you have to deal with the brain freeze aspect of it as well. But for somebody who is a professional competitive eater, I did find it interesting that he bit the hand that feeds him here with the Nathan's hot dog eating contest, because that's the biggest one of all. We'll revisit this another time, because our guy Mike Somich,
we're gonna have to really take a study on this. I mean, we're gonna, well, Mike Somich has got a guy that understands how to eat hot dogs, so we'll see how that works out. But I mean, Like, I don't know how to handle it. I mean, the field's wide open now. I mean, we'll have to go back and look who finished second last year and the year after that, see if we can find a sleeper in here. We'll see where the betting line's shifting to.
The Lombardi line, giving you the breaking news you need to know. But we reference Mike Somich because the running joke, and it's not even a joke because it's true, because Mike literally can handicap anything that we have thrown his way. But he has a guy in the hot dog eating contest that gives you the intel and like the numbers and all of that stuff. So as we get closer to the 4th of July, we'll definitely hit him up for that. But these last 4 minutes here, Michael, I want to go kind of rapid fire with you briefly. Teams who missed the playoffs last year, there are a handful of them in the NFL that are favored to make the playoffs this year. So like the great Bill Belichick once said, it's on to Cincinnati. Let's start with the Bengals here. Cincinnati to make the playoffs with Joe Burrow back healthy, minus 260. To miss is +205. They're coming off a 9-8 season where they obviously had the Jake Browning experience and beyond. The last time that they made the playoffs, they made the AFC Championship. So what do you think here with Joe Burrow and the Bengals coming back?
They have to make it. I mean, they're really good. They have some concerns offensively at right tackle and in the line. I mean, that Zach Moss played better than Joe Mixon, no question. And look, their defense is going to be stronger. They'll miss DJ Reader, although they signed Sheldon Rankins to come back in there. You know, Hendrickson had his moment of complaining, but then he showed up. He's not going to hold out. Higgins will show up. He's not going to pass up $21 million. They'll have him back. Look, Burrow back, a better defense back, play from in front. Yeah, I like it. I'm shocked it's still – I thought it might go to minus 300. Yeah.
How about the Atlanta Falcons? They're in a situation a lot like the Denver Broncos in that they played for a Super Bowl and haven't made the playoffs since. To make, though, with all of the high expectations they have with Kirk Cousins as their new quarterback, minus 240 is the price. They're plus 200 to miss coming off a 7-10 season, third finish in the NFC South.
You know, I was doing some research for an article tomorrow, and I didn't realize this, but there's only two teams that haven't made the playoffs in the last 10 years. And it's the Denver Broncos and the New York Jets. Now, the Falcons have, so they fit in that category. Look, if they don't make the playoffs with the money that they've invested in Kirk Cousins and all these number one draft picks, but you're never getting me to support a team to make the playoffs that are not good on defense, that cannot rush the passer. It's a prerequisite to getting into the playoffs. You make every bad quarterback look good when you can't pressure the quarterback. It's just a fact. I don't care how many wide receivers you draft. I don't care how much you look at analytics. If you can't rush the passer and create turnovers, you're not a playoff team.
So perhaps a sprinkle on miss the playoffs at plus 200, bet $100 and win back 200. How about the New York Ifers facing the longest active playoff drought in major professional sports to make the postseason minus 160? Can they do it?
You know, I would say, yeah, minus 160. That's, you know, you think it'd be, look, the Bengals have their minus numbers higher than this. Mm-hmm. They're giving you a little bit of an if here. They're like us, Stormy. They're ifers here.
I think so.
I think I would take the minus 160. I still can't understand how Saleh comes out and says it was an unexcused absence when they've known all along when it was. Like, who handles PR in this building? Like, how dumb are they? Does anybody talk to anybody? Like, seriously, I mean, it's so bad.
It's the Robert Saleh special, Michael. But yes, it does appear like, I feel like, especially considering the division with which the Bengals play in, being as competitive as it is, that their number shouldn't be higher than the Jets, but there we sit. Last one here, final minute. The Chicago Bears with their new prize possession, Caleb Williams, to make the playoffs minus 120, miss even money coming off a 7-10 year. They kept Eberflus around to see what he could build.
I mean, the odds tell you they're a 9-8 team with the odds. I'll take the plus money here. I think that's what it is. They're a plus money. I think at plus 100, I'll take it. Minus 120, it seems like they're like 9-8. If you like the 9, you got to pay a little tax. If you like the 8, you get some money back. If they're 8-9, you know what I mean, Stormy?
Mm-hmm.
I think they're 9-8 team. I really do. I would go miss here.
I feel like the offense will be solid. I'm just very curious if what we saw the back end of the season defensively, if it was real or if they're going to regress a little bit. So we shall see. Yeah. Fun show as always, my friend. I'll see you back here tomorrow.
Thank you, Stormy.
All right, everybody. Good luck with your bets. Enjoy the day. Coming up next here on VSiN, it's Sharp Money. Don't miss it.